I would like to dedicate this year to Ezra Schwartz, a young man who went to Eretz Yisrael for the year, who was killed in a terrorist attack a few days before the shir was recorded in November 2015, and his levaya is today. May Hashem avenge his death and the many others who have been murdered today and over the past few weeks. Hashem yikom damam. So, in lecture 13, we're going to take a look at Shechita. And Shechita is the method that is prescribed by the Torah for us to use in order to eat a kosher animal. So let's begin with a discussion regarding the Torah's stance on kindness to animals. Once you have a kosher animal that will be used for consumption, excluding fish, the animal must be slaughtered in a very specific way. In order to understand Shechita, we need to look a little bit at its source and its history. To a religious Jew, taking the life of an animal and eating it is something very serious. It's not really a Jewish sport to go out and hunt for no reason, just for the thrill of the hunt. It's not something that Jews generally do. And we want to make sure that we safeguard ourselves from becoming used to killing and from introducing animal nature into man. And as we discussed earlier, man was initially meant to be a vegetarian. Without God's explicit permission to kill animals for consumption, which was given after the flood, we would never do such a thing. In the words of the author, it would not be defensible. We find that after permission was given, when the Jewish nation was in the desert, they had certain restrictions. Rabbi Shmuel says in Chulin, that having basar tava, meat for regular consumption, was not allowed in the desert unless one was bringing a shlamim, a peace offering. After entering the land, animals that could have been sacrificed for a karbon, but weren't, they were then permitted. And this is spelled out in the Torah, in Devarim 12, 20 and 21. The Torah says as follows, Ki archiv Hashem Elokach es gvulucha kasher dibar lach v'yomarta ulchila vasar ki se'ave nafshicha le'echol basar b'chol avas nafshicha tochal basar. So basically there's going to be a time when you're in your land and you're going to say, I want to eat meat. And the Torah now permits it. B'chol avas nafshicha tochal basar. And the next pasuk says, Ki yirchak mimecha hamakom asher yivchar Hashem Elokach losum shimo sham. V'zavachta mi'bekarecha u'mitzonecha asher nasan Hashem lecha kasher tzivisicha v'chalta v'sharecha b'chol avas nafshecha. So the Torah here in Chaf Aleph is very explicit that we are allowed to eat meat, and it says, interestingly, it says kasher tzivisicha, you should slaughter it as I have commanded you. So let's get back to that. Now to break down these psukim, the Torah first states, that you desire to eat flesh. And this refers to basar tava, meat eaten for any purpose other than a sacrificial reason. This became permissible only after the Bnei Yisrael entered into the land, and many lived too far from Yerushalayim to practically bring sacrifices. The Torah is seemingly using a guarded approach when it allows us to partake of meat. The Gemara in Chulin comments on this, that the Torah is warning us to partake of meat only if a person has a specific appetite for it. Rambam writes that a person who is healthy can consume meat once a week. However, one is allowed to eat meat every day. It seems that meat is really supposed to be connected to sacrifices, as we can see from these psukim. We are allowed to eat based on a concession that the Torah gives to man, and this is meant to satisfy some kind of appetite in man. We then see that as man becomes weaker over time, meat consumption becomes more and more necessary. Just as an aside, it seems that over the past 100 years or so, the thinking on this may be changing. It used to be that a sick person would specifically eat meat to gain strength, and many European Jews seem to share this thinking. You could still find people that definitely think like this. And the halacha discusses this as well. But today we have entire movements that do not consume meat for all sorts of reasons, good reasons, bad reasons, and they seem healthy. They seem to know which supplements or different types of foods you could take in order to get the same nutritional value that you would from meat. But be that as it may, it is true that this used to be the conventional thinking, and I think that it still is in much of the world. And meat helps man gain strength, and it keeps him healthy. So back to our topic. We further show sacredness for life by reciting a bracha before the act of shechita. Shechita is not supposed to be performed by just any individual, but rather the shochet should be a pious and learned individual. While the Torah allows any God-fearing individual who knows the laws of shechita to perform the actual act, we traditionally only allow one who has been officially appointed as a shochet to complete the act. The requirements to be a shochet include good character, piety and learning, as well as official ordination. And I'll just give you a direct quote here. He writes, "Consider a well-known French writer expressed himself. The one circumstance that no Jewish mother ever killed a chicken with her own hands, and you will understand why homicide is rare among the Jews." And this is quoted by someone named A. Leroy, and I can't pronounce the last name. It's B-E-A-U-L-I-E-U. Now, first of all, we know that, according to Torah law, women may perform shechita. The custom, however, is that they don't. And second, we find throughout Tanakh the effect that a mother has on her children and the household, both positively and negatively. We find that by all the kings of Yisrael, it always says who their mother was, so why? Why exactly does it say that? And this is attributed to whether they were good kings or bad kings. This is all based on how the mother, what her influence was over her child. And we have, of course, many, many other examples in Tanakh. We have with Avram and Hagar versus Avraham and Sarah, etc. And it's fascinating to see this insight from a non-Jew and the recognition of the sensitivities that a Jewish mother has and how that transfers to and helps to mold the next generation. The Gemara relates that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi was once insensitive toward an animal which was being sent to be slaughtered. And as a punishment, he suffered pain for 13 years until a time came when his daughter was going to kill a small creature. The Gemara tells us that he told her to spare the animal since Hashem's mercy extends to all of his creatures. And at this point, the pain that he suffered for all those years was taken away. So this is just one incident in our vast literature that discusses the treatment of animals. We have numerous commandments in the Torah related to the treatment of animals. So let's go through some of them. Animals must rest on Shabbos. One may not plow with two different types of animals. If one wants the eggs from a nest, you must chase the mother bird away. While an animal is working in the field, you may not muzzle that animal. When an animal is born, one may not remove it from the mother for 7 days. An animal and its young cannot be killed in the same day. One is not allowed to eat until his animals are fed. We see in the Torah that when Eliezer was seeking a wife for Yitzchak, one of the signs he looked for was that the girl should be kind to animals. So we see from all of these that Tsar Bali Chaim is part and parcel of Judaism, and we take harming animals very seriously. So let's move now to part two. And here we are going to discuss attacks on Shechita, without really getting into it so much. We have now established that you must be kind to animals. The Torah mandates this. This is an absolute. The same laws of kindness surround Shechita, and the process is designed to cause the least amount of pain possible to the animal. We are all aware that Shechita is often attacked. During the Nazi regime, Shechita was banned on a pretense of morality. While the Nazis tortured and killed millions of us, they said that they were so moral that they would not allow Shechita. All legislation aimed at Shechita is religious persecution, and it causes massive difficulties for the Jewish people. And we could say that not everyone who's against Shechita is automatically an anti-Semite, but not surprisingly, the two often go together. Shechita is often maligned that it is an innovation of the rabbis and not of biblical origin, and therefore these change not just into attacks on Shechita, but attacks on the oral law as well. So we have arguments like these, and they're very common. And there are all sorts of literature out there written on the defense of Shechita. So let's look now in part 3 at the act of Shechita, again without getting too specific. The knife is such that it is meant to cause a painless death, and there are 5 conditions that have to be met when slaughtering. So the first is there can't be any interruption. Second is that no pressure is allowed. The third, the knife must be visible the entire time, so wool and feathers would be a problem. Number 4, it must be performed within a certain area on the animal. And number 5, the knife must be perfectly smooth, not to cause any tearing. Now, if all these rules are not adhered to, and the act is not carried out exactly as it is supposed to be carried out, the animal is not kosher. And such an animal we call a nevela. If one eats nevela, he has transgressed a positive and a negative prohibition. The positive we find in Devarim 12:21, which we quoted already, which says that you must slaughter the animal the way I showed you. And there's also a negative command that comes from Devarim 14:21, which says that it is not permitted to eat any nevela. Now in 12:21, we have open reference to the oral law, we mentioned this briefly before, as the Torah says, as I have commanded you. Yet nowhere in the Torah does it relate to us how to perform Shechita. We only know this based on our oral tradition. The author ends by saying, here we have a classical example of the inseparable unity and contemporaneous revelation of written and oral law, which are both of Sinaitic origin and equally binding on the Jew. The next part of Shechita is called Kisui Hadam. It's a mitzvah to cover the blood of a slaughtered animal. When one performs Shechita on a chaya, a wild animal, or an oaf, a bird, there is a command to cover the blood of the animal. And this is from 17:13 in Vayikra. The Torah states, Ve'ish ish mi b'nei Yisrael min hager hagar b'socham asher yotzud tzeid chaya oaf asher ye'achel v'shafach es damo. There are, of course, many details of Kisui Hadam, such as what items can be used to cover the blood, how to cover it, how much needs to be covered, and other halachos. And the only one that I'm going to mention for now is that the mitzvah applies only to an animal that was properly shechted. If an animal was not properly shechted, and it is a nevela or a treifa, then this mitzvah of Kisui Hadam does not apply. So what's the reason for Kisui Hadam? So Diane Grunfeld, not surprisingly, explains the mitzvah according to Rav Hirsch. Now, the context of the pasuk that we quoted is about eating blood. If we look in both the preceding pasuk, which says, Al kein amarti livnei Yisrael, kol nefesh mikem lo sochal dam, v'hager hagor b'sochachem lo yochal dam. And if we look at the pasuk afterwards, it says, Ki nefesh kol basar damo v'nafsho hu. Va'omar livnei Yisrael, dam kol basar lo sochelu, ki nefesh kol basar damohi, kol ochilav yikares. So the Torah tells us the reason we're not allowed to have blood is because the life of the flesh is its blood. It is through the blood that the life force, or the soul, directs its force on the body. So we could say that blood is a visible messenger of the invisible soul. And it's improper to leave this blood, which we are hesitant to take in the first place as our food, lying on the ground. Animal blood, we know on the Mizbeach that it represents human blood, which all the more makes it appropriate to cover it over. Now, I like this explanation, but it's interesting to note that in relation to sacrifices, we do not place chayos on the Mizbeach, we only place behemos or ophos. So it's a little bit of a confusing point. We said that the Torah does not allow us to have blood. And it's possible that the Torah wants to stress the difference between animal nature, which is represented by its blood, and human nature, which is identified by morality and moral freedom. We know that the Torah says you should cover the blood with afar, with dust. When the Torah records the creation of animals in Bereishis, it is described as being from the ground, the body and the life force, in other words, the blood. Everything is from the ground. However, by man, only his body is from the ground, but God himself placed that life force in him. So again, we're looking at blood in a symbolic way here. And this stresses the contrast between man and animal. So finally, in section 5, we're going to very briefly discuss the last step, at least as far as the shochet is involved with, which is called bedika. And this is the process of examining a shechted animal to make sure it is not a trefa. And generally, we follow rov. Most animals are okay, with the exception of the lungs, which are checked for irregularities. But the law of trefa really includes a lot more than just the animal's lungs. I'd like to read inside now because I cannot summarize as well as he writes here. The religious responsibility which is connected with the calling of a shochet is very great indeed. The slightest mistake in the act of shechita makes the animal nevela, unfit for Jewish consumption. Only skill and conscientiousness on the part of the shochet can be our guide in this respect. In his responsible task, the shochet stands alone before God and his conscience. He has to examine the knife before and after the act of shechita to find out whether it is faultless, sharp, and free of any notches, dents, and fissures, the presence of which would render the act of shechita invalid and the meat forbidden for food because of nevela. The same applies to the other main rules of shechita based on the oral law, which were enumerated above. Similarly, if a shochet is not conscientious in the bedika, the examination of the carcass, he could be the cause of serious infringements of the laws of our holy Torah. He must therefore be a reliable man of good character, piety, and learning. Although a shochet is given a license to practice his profession only after careful training and a thorough examination in the theory and practice of the laws of shechita and other dietary laws, and all this after his religious character has been testified for by a reliable Orthodox rabbi, much of this activity must be carried out unobserved by others and remains a matter beino ubein kono between him and his maker. Even if the act of shechita is carried out technically correct by a shochet who is not an observant Jew, such shechita would nevertheless be considered invalid and the meat would remain nevela, forbidden for Jewish consumption. Small wonder, then, that one of the first things conscientious Jews inquire about before they partake of meat in a strange town is whether the shochet and the authorities who appoint him are religiously reliable. And then we get into a little bit here about the job of the butcher, but we're going to get more into that in the next chapter, where we're going to take a look at some of the forbidden and non-forbidden parts of a kosher animal, and those involve more the butcher. I just want to say that we are so lucky today that we have organizations like local Vadim or big companies such as the OU, which take away all these issues. We don't have to think about it. We don't have to think about who was the shochet who slaughtered a certain animal. Assuming you walk into a store with a good hechsher on it, it's not something that you have to worry about. And it's an amazing thing that we see the difference between this book, which was written probably sometime in the 60s, because the copyright is early 1970s, 1972. And today we are seemingly in a better place when it comes to kashrus.